Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. If you thought the Columbia Journalism Review was just a magazine, well, you're only half right. There is, in fact, another review of Columbia journalism underway right now. See, the school recently announced that its search for a new dean is on hold until it figures out just what it wants to be and is with the help of a multi-member task force reviewing its own mission statement. Now, this can be construed as either very good or very bad news. Good if you think that the task of the storyteller in this millennium has shifted somewhere beyond the role played by Jimmy Olsen at the Daily Planet. Bad if perhaps the number one hall of journalistic learning is admitting that worse than not knowing what the story or the lead is, it's not sure what it's supposed to be doing. Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you on this. Journalists have long debated the value of learning in front of the blackboard versus learning in the field. What are your thoughts? And in the ever-changing world of media, what do you think journalists should be taught, regardless of where or how they learn whatever they're learning? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me on the program today is Orville Schell. He is the dean of the University of California Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism and a longtime contributor to, among many publications, the New York Review of Books, the Atlantic Monthly, Newsweek, and the LA Times Magazine. Gregory Favre is also with us. He's currently a distinguished fellow of journalism values at the Poynter Institute, formerly a reporter and an editor with the Atlanta Journal, the Palm Beach Post, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Sacramento Bee. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Dick.
Pleasure.
Orville Schell, let me begin with you. The review that Columbia's announced, is this got journalism schools right across the country asking the same question?
Well, I think it's a worthy question to ask, but I think it also ought to be said that it's not only journalism schools that are in a crisis and in unclear in concept in some measure, but I think journalism as a whole in America is in something of a crisis and an identity crisis. So it's difficult to know how sort of the seedbed of the greater proposition of the media fits into the media. What are we feeding? What is it that the industry, so-called, wants in terms of recruits for the future? I think that's a question which is going to have to get considered in this larger question of what should Columbia do? What should it be all about? And how should it reformat itself?
Be more specific, though. You said there's a crisis in journalism in the country. What's that crisis?
Well, I think much of the verities of what is good journalism, owing neither fear nor favor to anybody, independence, thoughtfulness, thoroughness, credibility, the permission for journalists to do what needs to be done, regardless perhaps of the length. We are in a world that is increasingly soundbitten, commercialized, rushed, ratings-driven. All of these things have conditioned what the job market is like, where young people can go, and what kind of journalism they're going to have to do when they get out into the, quote, real world. So that means that journalism schools have to kind of reorganize themselves to look upward and to look at the world into which they are feeding people. Sometimes, I mean, I feel here at Berkeley that to teach young people to write well, edit well, research, be credible, in a certain sense, we may be training them for oblivion. We may be training them to do a kind of excellence of journalism that for which there is not a tremendous demand anymore.
Gregory Favre, do you agree that the demand for good journalists is not there?
No, I think Orville's been a little pessimistic. I think there still is a great demand. In your previous hour, I heard one of your people talk about being better informed and wanting the dialogue and wanting to be able to debate the great issues of today. And I think that's what journalism has to do. It has to provide that kind of information. Reporters and writers and editors have to and whether it be in broadcast or print or online, has to give their audience that kind of information that they can do those things.
Now, you've sat on the boss's side of the editor's desk at a few places. You've hired a few journalists yourself. Tell me from your point of view, if we were to do a poll of newspaper editors, radio, television, news directors at this point, and ask them if they thought it was important that new employees come from journalism school, what would they tell us?
I think, you know, I think you'd get a mixed bag of answers. It never hindered me one way or the other as to whether they did or didn't come from a journalism school. We had some great people who came out of journalism school, including Alvo School at University of California, Berkeley. But at the same time, many, many people I've hired through the years had no journalism school background but had learned their craft inside of a newsroom and brought other disciplines to their writing and their reporting. I think it would be a mixed bag. I don't think there's any one simple answer to that question.
Orville, you got to Berkeley not through the academic stream, but as a reporter yourself. In fact, you in your earlier years at the school wondered what you were doing there. Am I right?
Yes, I mean, I certainly I do very little of journalism schools when the prospect of running one arose, and I think, as Greg suggests, there are many ways to roam, and I wouldn't for a minute say that the only way to become a good journalist is to go to journalism school. But I do think that, you know, in my own case, and probably in Greg's case, the way we learned was through situations which I think are becoming less common. I learned by being, you know, literally adopted at a really great magazine, The New Yorker, and for many, many years working with some absolutely superb editors who took me under their wing, spent thousands of hours editing my pieces. And it was really from them that, you know, I learned not only how to write, but how to see the shape of a piece, how to edit, and just rather mysteriously, one absorbs values, judgments, a whole way of looking at the craft. But I think
Your best, do you want to try and recreate that in a school setting?
Well, I think, you know, my whole commitment at this school is to sort of look at how I learned and others that I respect learned and then try to replicate that. And I think there's really no better system than the old medieval system of masters and apprentices. That means working very closely in workshop-like context with really good people who will spend the time editing, talking, drinking, doing whatever has to be done, not sitting in classrooms screwed to the floor on chairs in large lecture halls. I don't think that's a very effective way to learn this particular craft. And I think also that media outlets today, in the sort of the hurly-burly of the market-driven quality of so much of journalism, have less and less time to cultivate journalists at the sort of lower levels of the food chain. So the way I look at it is something like a ladder that is missing some of the rungs at the bottom tiers, and I think that's really the role that journalism schools can aspire to play in this process.
Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. As the consumers of journalism produced by this radio program and the newspapers that you read and the television that you watch, we'd like some input from you on the moment of reconsideration that Columbia has triggered in journalism schools. Not that these questions aren't asked on a more regular basis anyway, but we'd kind of like to hear about the product that you're getting and whether or not you think that the people producing it are up to the level that suits your standards. Let's go first to Madison, Wisconsin. Diana's on the line. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I agree with the last guest that was speaking. I think, you know, master and apprenticeship is now a blind alley, and I think teaching has become a blind alley instead of an open road. Years ago, you could work beside somebody who was a master at their craft and learn it so well and you felt so good because you were with somebody who knew what they were doing, and it was an enriching and cultivating experience, learning experience.
So why is that disappearing, Diana? Why isn't that something that can be maintained?
Because I think that people, when they go into a craft such as journalism or anything, they have to go to school. We have laws that say we have to sit in a classroom. We can't apprentice with somebody, and that's become part of the problem. I think that, you know, if students were allowed to, at a certain point in their educational pursuit, to say, I would like to apprentice with somebody, I'd like to go to a newspaper, or I'd like to go to a auto mechanic, or I'd like to go to wherever they want to choose to go to and apprentice with somebody, and that person says, okay, come along with me, and I'll teach you everything I know to the best of my knowledge. I think the one-on-one apprenticeship is so much better than sitting in a classroom, like your guest said, glued to...
All right, let's see if we can hear from Greg Favre on this, because, you know, Greg, if you're hiring someone for City Hall coverage or to send them out on a beat, these days it's tough to, you know, when they're cutting back the number of journalists, to say, well, I want you to work with this woman because she's got all the experience you can learn from her.
Yeah, but I've always believed, Dick, that mentoring programs are necessary inside newsrooms, and I've always tried to have those kinds of programs in any newsroom where I was an editor. And I think it does exist. I don't know about the master apprenticeship relationship that Orville was talking about. In the old days, perhaps there was more of that. But there's still a mentoring program that goes on, and there's an internship program, and almost all of Orville's students after their first year end up with internships, and many of those then lead to full-time jobs in newsrooms. And it's a learning process. An internship in most places is indeed a mentoring and learning process for those students who come into the newsroom.
So, Orville, maybe
but
it's
Greg,
not...
I would,
yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, in response to what Greg has just said, it should be noted that the paper where he worked until recently, one of the McClatchy papers, has an absolutely stellar internship program. And not only that, they pay the interns. But there are many big papers, and I think this is a particularly problem for people interested in broadcast news. They will tell you that they cherry-pick 5 years out. In other words, they want people with 5 years of experience. They don't really care how you get that experience. That's someone else's job.
Yeah, I agree, Orville, and I disagree, obviously, with that policy, because I've never put a five-year experience level on anybody I've hired. If you have talent, if you have ability, I don't care if you're 21 or if you're 80, age shouldn't come into it at all.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. This hour, we began by talking about a big review that's going on at the Columbia School of Journalism, while that school figures out how it wants to teach journalism to people who will be writing the stories, telling the stories that you'll be listening to and reading in the years ahead. And if you've got thoughts on how that should change to better suit your interests, your needs, we'd like to have you in on the program. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University.
My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. This hour, a conversation about the journalism that you're getting, whether or not it's up to the standards that you like, because the people who are busy figuring out where the next generation of journalists are coming from are also figuring out what it is that's required of them, and your input is useful to us on this program. With me, I have Orville Schell. He's Dean of the University of California's Graduate School of Journalism at Berkeley, and Gregory Favre, who is a Distinguished Fellow of Journalism Values at the Poynter Institute, most recently was Executive Editor at the Sacramento Bee. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's start in Brockton, Massachusetts. Bev is on the line. Hi, Bev.
Hi. Thanks very much for the program. I'm calling because my responsibilities in the field of health and human services is in strategic planning. So I'm very much in favor of what Columbia has done, which is to stop and take stock of where it's going. And then relative to the question of journalism, I am very dismayed at what's available today, which is why I listen so much to National Public Radio and I watch public television. I think that what I see on television isn't really journalism, it's more entertainment. And I'm really offended by that. And I wish very much that journalism would be the way at least I learned about it. I went to a school where journalism was a great program, and it was reporting with accuracy and objectivity and not a lot of storytelling to entice a reader. I just wish it were more newsworthy.
It's an interesting point that you raise when you talk about radio and television and print altogether, because you know sometimes they fit very well together in terms of, Gregory, the principles of storytelling, and sometimes not so well together.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, of course, it's becoming closer and closer together as we move in, as technology moves us into the area of one newsroom for broadcast and print and online all together, as happening in a number of markets throughout the country, a thing we call convergence, where reporters are reporting across many, many platforms. And I think that's one of the things that Orville and other deans have to think about, how you train journalists to be able to report and to perform at that on top level at all those different outlets.
And again, Orville, it's expectations. It's whether or not the organization that employs the journalist, whether or not it's a local television station or whatever it is asking that person to tell an interesting, objective story that Bev can watch.
Well, and whether, you know, they'll give them the time to do it, you know, if everything has to be short and jazzy, it really limits what can be done. I heard a wonderful program the other day that came over the BBC, and it reminded me of what, you know, a kind of good journalism that's not expensive but very compelling, but perhaps to a niche market. And it was a series of three foreign correspondents just talking about their work. I mean, what it means to be a foreign correspondent and what they have to do in their respective countries and how they got there. They were just sitting in a radio studio talking, and it was absolutely marvelous, wonderful, I thought, broadcasting, and simple. And I thought, to my great dismay, that, you know, at least on the AM dial, you can skid from one end to the other, and you will never run into anything like this. And it's a great shame that there isn't at least one or two stations on the dial. After all, the airwaves are owned by the public. The public may have forgotten that, but it is nonetheless true, and they're supposed to be operated in the public interest, but we are in a deregulatory climate at this point, and so largely that has been forgotten. But you know, it's this kind of journalism that's not difficult to do. It takes a certain sensibility, but most of all, it takes a place to put it. And if there aren't places to put it, people can learn how to do it, but it's a bit like, you know, monasteries in the Middle Ages, keeping the classics, but nobody's reading them.
Bev, let me just ask you one more quick question. You're
sure.
In the health industry, and those of us in the business of journalism tend to look at what it is that we do as quite different from a craft, quite different from, you know, a professional like a doctor or a lawyer who needs, you know, a specific body of knowledge from which to operate on. Do you think that that's a useful way for journalists to approach the work they do by saying, well, what we do is a whole lot different from pretty well anything else around, or do you think that's a little exclusionary?
I wouldn't see it as exclusionary. I think every craft has its skills that people need to develop, but each craft also has, or each profession needs to maintain a very high standard of ethics that they consistently check against any, some standards. And that's what I'm afraid has happened in journalism. And I couldn't agree more with what the gentleman just said earlier about it's really hard to find that kind of journalism that's factual. And I don't see this as something so individual to journalism that it's not something everyone in every profession or field has to do, which is consistently watch itself, watch right. where it goes and grows. But really live up to some standards and ethics. And I'm also afraid that the public doesn't hold journalists, you know, that we have a lot of culpability in this, too, because we don't hold them to the kind of ethics or standards that I wish we did.
Bev, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-423-8255 to La Crosse, Wisconsin now, and Susan's joining us. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. I am a proud graduate from the master's program at University of Missouri, also attended the Poynter Institute for the Entrepreneurial Program, and I think the biggest benefit to that of that education for me is not only as a protector of the language, which I think goes awry, in general journalism, but also that I was able to walk right out of the program into the Chicago Tribune newsroom. And I think that was the benefit in choosing the school that I did, not only a practical program, but the networking that's involved. And each of the various programs has a network in different places. I understand Columbia is East Coast kind of stuff, and my program was more Midwest. And I think that's the real value in the program from a student's perspective anyway.
What about what you taught, what you were taught?
What I was taught was valuing the language and being a steward of making sure that it's treated properly and preserved properly. And that has been a value no matter what I do throughout my career. So,
what about the skills as a storyteller, the ability to sniff out a good story and go after that?
Well, I kind of took a turn along the way. I was on the copy desk and went into design, newspaper design and layout, although I did take writing courses.
Right.
And I am starting to do more freelance writing again and appreciate that it's like riding a bike, that those skills that I learned your second semester at Missouri, you were there in the newsroom writing on beats right away. And those skills have come back to me and served me well no matter what I do.
Greg, this is a school that ranks among some of the best in the nation, doesn't it?
Yes, Missouri does. And it's we've had a lot of good graduates, and we get a lot here at the Poynter Institute. And one of the things I would point out, Dick, is that one of the things we don't do well in our business is to continue training programs. One of the first budgets that's cut in most newsrooms and most newspapers, broadcast stations, whatever the case may be, is that training budget, so that additional training such as at Poynter Institute or American Press Institute and other places where journalists can learn more about their craft and perfect more of their skills just goes by the wayside.
All right, Susan, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-423-TALK to Louisville, Kentucky now, and Arnold's on the line. Hi, Arnold.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I'm a retired newspaper editor from Massachusetts, and I've never been a big fan of graduate schools of journalism, even though my boss sponsors one. That's Newhouse.
Why?
I think that a well-rounded education is much more important. I think college should be to learn history and sociology and art and literature and all of the basic things of living, and we'll teach them the journalism. I mean, obviously they have to know some journalism, and Missouri does a particularly good job, I think, because they run their own newspaper. But in general, I think you get too much theory and not enough practicality.
Horrible.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it is really quite a lethal, or can be lethal, for undergraduates to major in journalism. I think they ought to be studying history, politics, literature, classics, anything, to sort of broaden their base so that when they come to journalism, they have a fund of, you know, awareness about the world. I'm more of a proponent, I think, of journalism graduate school than as an undergraduate major, because I think it is too confining. And I think this gets us back to the question that Columbia is asking, is, you know, if there is a role for journalism schools, what is it? And this was the this is really the question I confronted when I came here to Berkeley, and that was, all right, here's the school. Can it be fashioned into something that really is worthwhile doing, not just going on and plodding through the classes that have been held over the centuries? So I think the answer to that is, yes, one can construct a program that is intellectually exciting, that introduces students to subjects which, once they get at a media outlet, they get niched into a task. It's very hard for them to get a broad array of speakers, of events, of opportunities to travel around the country, around the world on reporting, to learn some new media, learn some radio, learn some television, even though they may be interested in print. And I think that's what can happen. And it's a very worthy moment in anybody's life to take a year or two before you plunge into your professional career, which will have a momentum of its own, and expand your mind, your intellect, your skills, the group of people you know that you feel comfortable with. And this is the challenge, and this is what I think a good journalism tries to do. Now, there are all kinds of unholy things that often get thrown into journalism schools, like PR, advertising, and I have to tell you that, you know, as a dean, I feel blessed beyond measure not to have these things in my school. If I did, I wouldn't be here. I think they're bedfellows that do not belong together. Then there's this discipline called mass communications. This is not something I know much about. It's, I think, probably worthy discipline, but I don't think it necessarily belongs cheek on jowl with journalism. It's something else, and yet it often gets thrown into the mix. And I think these three different elements, which very often coexist in one school, do create a murkiness in concept. And in some measure, I think this is what Columbia is thrashing through. And, you know, in a way, they may be thrashing through it for all of us. They're taking a few knocks for it, but it's a discussion that's worth having. Also, I think it's worth the larger journalistic community listening because, as I said at the outset, schools can be, when they're worth existing at all, seed beds for what happens later on. It brings up a new generation, and how that new generation is brought up is of some great consequence to whether this country is going to be able to talk to itself, discuss political issues seriously, social issues, and whether it's going to be able to govern itself with intelligence.
Greg, I listened to you chuckling there when Orville was talking about the public relations stream and the advertising stream in journalism school. And yet I have a friend, a woman who teaches at a journalism school, and I guess it was about 5 years ago, they were, you know, pushing out a couple of hundred grads each year, and they were all journalism grads, public relations. They were all going to the high-tech industry and writing little blurbs that went on software diskettes and making $85,000 a year. They didn't want to be journalists. They were going to get rich.
Before the dot-com bust.
Exactly. Now they're all trying to get jobs as journalists.
That's true. No, I just, Chuck, I agree with Orville. I think there should be a separation between those public relations and advertising and wonderful, worthy professions, but they ought not to be tucked inside the journalism schools. And I think that's one of the good things, as Orville said, about the program at Berkeley. He is free of all that. And most of his students, I assume, Orville, almost the vast, vast, vast majority of your students have not studied journalism before they get to you.
Yes. I mean, they may have been out in the world doing internships at some paper or, you know, doing some NGO work or something. We look for experience, but it is true. They relatively few have studied, quote, journalism as undergraduates. We select against that. I mean, I don't think that is necessarily, it certainly is not a plus for anybody coming to this school.
And Berkeley has always had, at least to my understanding, sort of a bias in the faculty for people who've had real practical experience and who bring that kind of experience to the teaching.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Arnold, thanks a lot for your call to Boston now. Colin's with us. Hi, Colin.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'll just preface this by saying that I've got this has nothing to do with journalism. I think journalism is a worthy craft and profession. But I wonder if the increasing prevalence of journalism schools, graduate journalism programs, has made journalism any better over the last couple of decades. You know, it seems like there was great journalism before there were journalism schools. There's great journalism now. And I wonder if it's done anything to move the needle.
Greg, do you want to start on that?
I don't know if I can be a judge over the years whether or not I think journalism today is very... I think we have some wonderful, wonderful people practicing journalism today. And as I've often said, I think the young people coming out of school today are probably smarter than they were when I was their age. Now, whether or not they are as knowledgeable about history and about current events as people at my age, when we used to read many more newspapers and we didn't have quite as much television and other things when I was that age. But I do think that journalism today is as strong as it's ever been. But and they have more outlets, but that could be good or bad, as Orville has said, as to whether or not we have the kind of focus we ought to have.
Okay, but dip your toe into the subjective world here. Colin's wanting to know whether or not the quality of the journalism today can be linked to journalism school. I'm not sure that...
I'm not sure I can really say that is the case. I do think, there may be in some isolated cases, I'm sure that's true, that students who have come out of journalism school are better prepared than they would have been if they had not gone. I didn't go to journalism school. I learned my journalism in a newsroom. My dad owned a weekly newspaper, so I was old enough to fold newspapers by hand, which was before I became a teenager. I was in a newsroom, and I was in running presses and doing all kinds of things that kids don't have to do today. So I learned mine much differently, and I had some great mentors throughout my career, and I'm still learning. I've been at it for more than 50 years, and I'm still learning. So I would think it's a mixed bag whether or not journalism schools have improved journalism today better than it used to be.
Orville?
I think everything is in who you get buddied up with, and I would simply say that I think now it is more difficult for people at these lower reaches of the journalistic food chain to find these mentors. We started a program here at Berkeley called the Editing Workshop, where we have five of the greatest editors in America who come. There's no classes. There's nobody. You don't arrive any place at any time. But that students who are doing long-form writing will work for a whole semester with one of these editors. They'll work on their piece. They'll rewrite it and edit it 10 times and then get it published. And, we did this. It's very costly. But out of recognition that, really, this is how you learn to be a magazine or a book writer.
Orville, I got to interrupt you because we are taking a short break. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, and that means that when we're doing our job, you're listening to something that's close to journalism, and we're interested in hearing from you as to whether or not what you're hearing is what you like to hear, what you're reading in magazines and newspapers, the television reporting that you're getting, because there is a moment in the journalistic teaching field in America now, with the Columbia School of Journalism reevaluating its program, when people are asking those questions about where the journalists are going to come from. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program, the Dean of the University of California's Graduate School of Journalism at Berkeley, Orville Schell, and Gregory Favre, who's Distinguished Fellow of Journalism Values at the Poynter Institute, most recently was Executive Editor of the Sacramento Bee. We're going to go to Raleigh, North Carolina now. Susie's joining us. Hi, Susie.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thanks.
I promised myself I wasn't going to ask that. it takes up time. I was calling because I've been a journalist for 30 years. I've crossed over into PR a couple times, and now I'm teaching freshman English at a community college. And I think that what I noticed most about what's coming out of journalism right now is the fact that there's not, especially in our area, there's not a commitment of the reporters to know the area before they go out and report it. I think it's just like knowing your history or knowing your sociology or knowing your psychology, you've got to know the area as well. And so with our journalists not knowing the area, they're having a difficult time reporting accurately. And then I hear people say, oh, the media. in that tone of voice because there's not accuracy and commitment out there. And I think that that concerns me most of all.
It's a good point. It's something that, Greg, you've written about, the fact that it was a whole lot easier years ago to hire someone who would staff the legislature or city hall and dig into that type of reporting than it is today.
I think your call is absolutely right, Dick. She hit it on the head when she said too many journalists today don't want to plant roots. We have such a mobile society today, and journalists move rapidly, much more so than in years past, where they sort of planted roots in a community, stayed in a community, and learned something about it. So we lose some of that institutional knowledge, that institutional memory that comes with having been in a community for a long period of time. And that does cost us some of our credibility. There's no question about that.
But is it that there's something not sexy about being the city hall reporter for the local paper when you could be the head of the investigative team?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely true. I've been disappointed, especially with young people coming out of college, and this doesn't hold most truly for Berkeley because they do put an emphasis on government and politics and other things. But so many young people come out of journalism schools today or come into newsrooms today without any real desire to cover the state legislature or to cover city hall or to cover the county government. Mm-hmm. They much rather be doing the major projects, the investigative pieces, the ones, you know, the Watergate era brought all that on, I think. And yet the day-to-day coverage of those important issues that affect every single person in our community are really what is that's our franchise. That's what we ought to be doing better and also do the extra stuff, those big projects as well.
I guess, Susie, it's growing up in the community, caring about the local issues, wanting to be a part of covering them is also what you're saying as well.
Well, even if a journalist is only in one spot for a little while, I don't think that you can go into any community, and even the foreign correspondents aren't going to walk into a country and begin covering the country without knowing anything about the community.
Yes, we are.
Knowing anything about
it. I hate to admit it.
And you've been there, have you?
You step right off the plane and you're filing. It's awful, but it's true.
I know, and I did. I did get to my one community newspaper and get thrown in immediately into a story that I had absolutely knew nothing about, and I had to learn, and that does happen from time to time, but there's also the commitment, I think, to knowing the area, to even the radio and TV people at least know how to pronounce the names of the towns in the county, you know, with just getting to know an area while you're feeling your way. You've got to feel your way some, but you've got to know an area as well, because then that does bring the commitment to accuracy. If you know the area, you're comfortable there, then you want to report accurately.
Susie, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
1-800-423-8255. Belmont, Massachusetts, and Jane's been waiting on the line. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you, Dick?
Fine.
Good. My question really, well, has to do with a concern. I've been in the media for more than 20 years, and I've noticed that with the changes in ownership at media entities, there's been a real change in values. And it used to be that journalists were sometimes at the helm of these organizations, and so there was sort of a sense of inherent news value and doing something because it was important. Now when you have business people at the helm, it's a very different situation. It is more about the bottom line, which means the structure of stories and of what counts as a story changes. And I've just noticed such a simple oversimplification, and it's very frustrating. So I guess I'm wondering, I mean, I'd love to teach journalism, but every time I go to write the letter to Jim Thistle at BU or whomever, I stop because I say, well, what am I teaching them? What am I going to be teaching them to do? I can't really go there and do subversion. I need to be teaching them what they're going to be going into, but what they're going to be going into, I don't necessarily have much faith in anymore.
Orville, how do you deal with that?
Well, I hope you don't give up faith in subversion. I mean, this is an important element in what we journalists aspire to do. You know, I think paradoxically, this country has some of the strongest, best codified, and clearest principles of what really constitutes the notion of good journalism. And in my experience, you know, there are an awful lot of very dedicated people in this field, because if you're a journalist, you're not going to make a lot of money. And they are dedicated to whatever, however you want to describe it, making a difference. There is something different about being a journalist than just being the Western regional sales manager for some big company. But, you know, there is, of course, this other imperative that you point to, namely the business side of things. It's inescapable. One would be very foolish to either impugn it or ignore it. but very often it has a profound sort of suffocating impact on the journal, what a journalist can do and how they can act.
Right.
We kind of know without being told what stories will sell, what our editors want, what our publishers would like to see, what will promote ratings, what will sell more papers, get more ads. This is a very subtle dynamic, but it tends to limit in many, many subtle ways the ways in which journalists who may be very dedicated can carry out journalism in its best sense as they understand it. This is just the real world. And if I may say, I think one of the jobs of a school is to inculcate in students a very keen sense of excellence and ethics, because when they get out into the real world, you know, life is full of compromises in any field. And what's important in my mind is to know, is not to say I'm never going to compromise, but to know when you're compromising and to do it as well as you can and still survive, still get the piece in, still get the segment on the air, whatever. That's the challenge.
Greg, slip your editor's hat on for a minute here. I mean, part of the work of a good editor also is to make sure that the journalists aren't supposed to be worrying about that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, and I've always tried to protect the folks who work in the newsroom from that, but there is, obviously they are business pressures, and we've felt them even more so in the last year or two, where advertising is down, especially the help wanted advertising, and there's been a lot of layoffs. 2,000 jobs were lost in newspapers last year, probably more than that in broadcast in the year 2001. So there have been a lot of layoffs, a lot of jobs that have gone by the wayside, and there's a tremendous amount of angst and anxiety in newsrooms, and I think it's up to editors and news directors and others to really try to protect the people and let them do the kind of work that Orville talks about that journalists ought to be doing.
Jane, thanks for your call. To Dodgeville, Wisconsin, and Barbara's on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I'm calling today not as a news purveyor, but as a consumer. I think that journalists not only report my world, they also have the opportunity to shape my values. And responding more particularly to the question of Columbia, I think that journalism schools need to be teaching their students how to care about their responsibility to their readers and their listeners.
How do they do that?
Are you asking
well,
me?
Yeah, I'm just curious to know when that's working for you, Barbara, as a consumer, can you see it? Can you identify it, or do you think that it's something much more subtle that's at play here?
What I'm aware of is that some people try to shape my values out of their values, and what I would like to have them do is help me shape my values by giving me the information in a format that is understandable, that is organized, that really clearly gives me some options.
Orville, it goes just to the very heart of what journalism is in terms of all the subjective decisions that are supposed to be made on the way to something that is presented as an objective presentation.
Well, I think the best kind of journalism, whether you're teaching it or doing it, is to try to facilitate people to make up their own minds. I mean, that's really what you want. You don't want to hector or bully them with them. You can have a point of view, but the goal should be to get people to come to some conclusions of their own. We see phenomena like Fox News, which is very sort of opinion-driven, very much dependent on sort of arguments and sort of barking dog type of exchanges. I'm not sure that's the best kind of journalism, but there probably certainly is a place for it. What I really fear is that we are losing the other kinds, the calmer places, the more thoughtful places where longer form journalism, whether it's on broadcast or print, will find a welcome home. I think all sorts of, I don't mind Fox, but if Fox is the template, which all the other media outlets, particularly in broadcast, are chasing to get ratings, then we're in deep trouble. And then I think we don't have this kind of respectful relationship between journalists and their consumers.
So is that the mission statement, Orville, for Columbia University to, or for Barbara, that you know, find a way of telling a story that allows people to make informed decisions?
You know, I think journalism schools can teach that, and we do teach that. That's one of our greatest aspirations, but we maybe end where we began. Is there going to continue to be a really receptive home for that sort of journalism in the marketplace? I think there are many good newspapers still in this country. I really fear for broadcast. I think magazines now are in something in a state of disarray. Book publishing in my lifetime has changed radically. Everything's in a state of tectonic change. So I think, you know, the market is more and more conditioning what happens. News is no longer viewed as a loss leader in broadcast. And yet somehow great papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post survive. It's interesting, the voting shares of their stock, which is publicly traded, are held by families. Something of an irony. And the families perhaps protect them. But I don't know what the future holds when these big, massive newspaper chains are being hounded by Wall Street for quarterly earnings reports, and there's nothing to do but to cut back or you know, go with the market.
Greg Favre, let's hear your mission statement in response to Barbara's question.
About what we should be doing as far as our credibility of...
Well, if you had a chance to write a line into the mission statement that they're drafting at Columbia, what would you say is the number one priority?
I think I would agree with what she was getting at, in that preparing students to help people make decisions that will affect their lives and how they can live their lives. This whole question of objectivity is, and it was originally, it wasn't meant that the reporters themselves would be objective. It was what their work would be objective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need to train people to do. And we need to talk about verification. We need to talk about transparency. We need to talk about a lot of things that Kovach and Rosenstiel talked about in their book on the elements of journalism. And I think there are a lot of lessons in that book which can be translated into sort of a mission statement for Columbia University.
Greg, thanks for being with us on the program.
Thank you.
Greg Favre is a Distinguished Fellow of Journalism Values at the Poynter Institute in Florida. Orville Schell, thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Orville is Dean of the University of California's Graduate School of Journalism at Berkeley. And Barbara, thanks for that call. Nice to hear from you. You can continue the conversation on our website. We are at theconnection.org. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBUR. Just